All right. Hello, my name is Abby Mickey. I'm here with Ian Treloar.
Hi.
And Matt Deneve.
Hello, I'm also here. Abby, how excited are you? Because you've been waiting a while for this one.
I am really excited. Honestly, I didn't think we were going to I didn't think we were going to review this album because I felt like my very fragile heart couldn't take the criticism after the Midnight's debacle. But when Ian said that he had been listening to it, I felt a little bit more confident that it would be a more positive experience to review this album than it had been for Midnight's. So yeah, I'm really excited. Today we're going to talk about the Tortured Poets Department by Taylor Swift. And like, full disclosure to everyone, so what has happened here is that I picked an album, Prelude to Ecstasy by The Last Dinner Party, and you may be sitting here looking at the title of this episode thinking, hold on a second, I thought I was going to get a Prelude to Ecstasy Last Dinner Party episode today, and we decided on the group chat last week. This is a week late because I don't know if you can hear, but I'm ill, still ill, but was still ill a week ago. But we decided last week, when talking about recording the Prelude to Ecstasy album review, that Ian hinted that he had been listening to Taylor Swift too much to talk about it. And I was like, this is my in. This is my moment. We're going to talk about the Tortured Poets Department instead.
I'm pretty happy about that because I have not listened enough to the other album. And I feel like I have kind of listened enough to this, so...
Maybe after we talk about this one, we can move on, but I doubt it, because this album has consumed my every waking moment from the moment of its drop. I can't stop listening to it. I go to sleep at night listening to it. I wake up in the morning and I turn it on. I have words stuck in my head that I don't know which songs they go to, but every single one of them is just amazing, and I can't wait to talk about it. I've been so excited about this album. I've been giddy with anticipation, only to then realize I had to talk about this album, and now I have debilitating nerves. But we'll see how this goes.
You're doing great.
Why are you nervous about it?
Because there's just so much. I mean, it's a 31-song beast with, you know, a two-plus hour runtime. And there is so much crammed into this album, so many tiny little moments, little flourishes that her and Aaron have done, or her and Jack. There are callbacks to former songs. There are so many rapid fire niche references that I need a Gilmore Girls style DVD pamphlet to get through this album and understand most of them. I don't know if you guys know this, but when you used to buy the DVD box set of the Gilmore Girls seasons, it would come with a little pamphlet that explained all of the niche jokes that they would make.
That's cool.
And I would really love one of those for this album.
Isn't it just Twitter? Isn't it just following all the Swifties on Twitter?
No, because they're insane. Like, the amount of theories that have come out of this album on Swiftie Twitter is just like, I saw a couple that I was just like, no, that's ridiculous. Let's just stay in the realm of Earth for a second. This is too much. And I would like Swift herself to write me a pamphlet. Like, for example, when she's talking in the Tortured Poets Department song, the title track, and she says, you're not Dylan Thomas, I'm not Patti Smith, this ain't the Chelsea Hotel. Would love to know the reference there. I'd love to know it. I'm sure that's one that's easily Googleable.
Yeah, I think that one probably is. Yeah.
The Chelsea Hotel is in New York, and it's where all of the famous rockers went and holed up when they were doing their druggy albums.
Yeah, but what do Dylan Thomas and Patti Smith have to do with that?
Well, I don't know about Dylan Thomas. Maybe they just use typewriters.
I'm sure
enthusiasts through history.
Yeah.
And a place that they might have used them.
I don't know if I am proud now that I have a World War II correspondence typewriter that, like, in pristine condition that I just cherish. It was my great grandfather's, and it's like one of my pride and joys. But the way she sings about typewriters, now I don't know if I'm proud of that or not.
Who uses typewriters anyway?
It sounds like your use of a typewriter has a little bit less pretense than Mr. 1975. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's lay this out. Okay. So I explained why we're here talking about this album instead of the album we're supposed to be talking about this episode. I would like to hear from you two about how much you've listened to the album, how you've felt about the album over time, because I feel like this is a slow burner or like a multi-listen burner. And yeah, I want to know things. And I want to know things from Matt.
Let me start by saying that I know how concerned you were about a repeat of the Midnight's episode. Was that actually before this podcast? That was separate, right? Before we even started this?
Think that it is not on... Yes, the Midnight's episode that I am referring to was a special edition episode that we gave to members of The Other Place as a parting gift. I can put it on this podcast feed if people want me to. Hit us up on Twitter and let me know if you want me to drop the Midnight's review on this feed. I can totally do that.
So I know that you're really concerned about us being too critical of this album, so I want to get ahead of that straight away and say right up front that I really enjoyed this album, and I think it's really strong overall, and that it is growing on me. And there is a lot to like about it. I do think it does have its faults, which I'm sure we'll get to. And I'm happy to go into as much or as little detail as you like about those. But I think overall it's very, very strong. It's growing on me the more I listen to it. And I think one of the overarching themes that I keep coming back to is, while it's a lot, it is a beast, like you said, 2 hours, and it's quite, quite daunting, I think, to listen to in a way. I'm just really happy for people like you, Abby, and others that are like super fans of hers that love luxuriating in all the details, that you've just got so much Taylor content at the moment, because there's a lot here for me to like. And I imagine if you're as big a fan as you are and as others are, then this must be an absolute gold mine. So I'm just really happy for you. And yeah, I'm happy to go into more detail, but they're kind of the broad brush strokes for me.
I don't remember our commentary on Midnight's as being that scathing, for what it's worth.
You both just didn't like it.
Yeah.
I didn't dislike it. I stand by that.
I think it's fine trending towards one of her weaker albums, but...
Yeah.
Did you change your mind at the Tour de France Femme when I played it for you almost daily?
No, I'd say it probably stayed about the same.
That's pretty disappointing.
Do need to go back to it properly.
Singing along would shift the needle.
I do need to go back to it and listen to it properly. And I had that thought a few times over the last couple of weeks, that... Yeah, it deserves another listen, particularly given how much of the first half of this album sounds like Midnight's, to me anyway. But I think I was just focused on spending whatever time I had listening to this because, yeah, it's 2 hours, and getting repeated listens in wasn't as easy as it was for you by the sounds of it.
I mean, I think that for this album, like when it first came out, I actually didn't quite... I heard like hints of Midnight's in the first half, or pretty much the Antonov tracks. And I saw a really awesome review someone sent me something that was very funny about like Midnight's and Folklore met at a party, got super high, and this is what came out of it. And I think that that's pretty spot on, to be honest. But I feel like even the tracks that are Midnight's-ish are not... I wouldn't put in the same realm as Midnight's. Like, I feel like the only track that could have seamlessly fit on Midnight's is I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. And that's because it's just so, so much Jack on that track that, and it's like much of Midnight's, it's so upbeat whilst also being just like absolutely devastating.
Yeah.
And I think much of Midnight's, if you look at Midnight's through the lens of what we now know about Taylor and her last couple of years, then Midnight's is actually like
rather a breakup in process rather than retrospective almost. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have to kind of default to your wisdom about how the tracks sound versus Midnight's, given I haven't listened to that as much. But I think, for me, the production, the Jack Antonoff production stuff felt very samey compared to Midnight's, or felt very reminiscent of that, to the point where I was like, okay, this is good. It's good. It's strong. But I kind of wanted something a little bit different. And... yeah, we can go into that in more detail as we go, but yeah, I found he was up to a lot of his old tricks, and his tricks are very good, but I think it kind of got a little bit samey for me at times, which is slightly hypocritical of me, given I'm about to talk about how much I loved the Desna stuff, which is basically all straight off Folklore and Evermore. But for
some
reason,
one of the best reviews, or like online, I don't know, like just someone on the internet, one of the best things I saw was somebody was like, I love Jack Antonoff, but she needs to work with other producers, because it felt like halfway through the album, he just got really tired and like he wasn't trying anymore. And I was like cackling reading it, because I was like, this person does not realize that this entire album is not Jack.
Yeah.
Like, that's they just thought like the Destiny stuff was Jack tired.
Yeah.
No, I think we should talk. Well, Ian, do you want to talk about your initial feelings and like how much you were able to listen to it and your thoughts over time? Because I feel like this was an album that kind of like, well, in my opinion, Midnight's and Lover, the more you listen to it, like the higher your understanding of it is.
Came to it intimidated by it. So I think that this is kind of true of my response to Taylor Swift over the last couple of years, in that there is simply too much content. There are too many albums. There are too many bonus tracks. There are too many re-releases. It's really hard to keep on top of. So when the Tortured Poets Department came out, I was excited. And then 3 hours after it came out, there was twice as much of it. And I was still excited, but I was also like, holy shit, like, how am I ever going to find time to digest this? So I was actually really grateful, that we were sort of compelled to listen to this for this podcast, because with the reissues and recent stuff, there hasn't been that compulsion, so I haven't listened to it. And for this, I was actually like obliged to sit down and spend time with it, and I'm really glad that I did, because I think it's better than Midnight's. I think it's a grower. I think it's better each time I listen to it. There's a lot more to enjoy each time I listen to it. There's so much to unpack that on my first listen or first couple of listens, where I almost approached it with exhaustion or just like, oh my God, it's too much to deal with. You need to spend time with this album. And I think that is also reflected in the critical response to it, because everybody's rushing to get their reviews out as soon as it lands. And how the fuck are you going to do that with a 2-hour album that I have spent the last 2 or 3 weeks listening to, and I still don't think that I've really got to the bottom of? Like, I don't think it's possible to have a complex understanding of this after 1 or 2 listens, which is what every reviewer in mainstream music criticism was trying to do. And I'm sure they're better at their jobs and are better at identifying things than I am, but also, come on, it's 2 hours and 2 minutes and 31 songs, and you're telling me that you're going to give a actually informed opinion on this album after that amount of time. So for me, I've going back to my listening stats, which I have connected to my Spotify, so I can log it. I've listened to 156 tracks off this album, which probably means that I've listened to it five times through, which doesn't sound like very much, but also it is 31 tracks, so I think that's quite a lot, actually.
Can I just add on the length of the album stuff? I think something that I keep coming back to when I think about this is, well, it's multifaceted. For super fans of the album, great, fantastic. Abby, I'm guessing you had no problems with the length of it. You can talk about that. But Ian, you and I are, I would say, pretty invested fans of Taylor Swift. We like her stuff. We would happily listen to whatever she's creating. But for both of us, this felt quite intimidating. And I feel like for the average listener who's already probably predisposed not to listen to a full album in this world of singles and playlists and whatever, a 2 hour behemoth is probably going to be off-putting. And I think that's, you know, you could say that that's just kind of what it is and they're missing out, but I think they are missing out. And I think that's kind of a shame because there is so much good stuff in here that intimidating listeners with the bulk of it feels like people aren't getting the full experience. And I keep coming back to the question in my head of why she didn't release this as two albums in the same way that she did Folklore and Evermore. If you're going to split them apart and put 3 hours between them and do a surprise, here's part two, why not just do two albums? It feels like the division is there sonically. It feels like the second half stands alone as an album. And it feels like listeners, particularly not so invested listeners, would have more time to digest the whole thing if you give them some space. And I'm really curious for your guys' thoughts on that, because I think that was something that I kept coming back to and that I think is, I think probably a misstep on her part if I had to offer an analysis of that.
I think that part of it is that she seems to be motivated by big stats. So this was the biggest album release on Spotify. She has some amount of songs that are in the top 100 as a result of this. And I think that you could probably say that there is a certain amount of juicing the stats for Spotify by having a 31 song album that pushes things up those rankings and increases that that wow factor of the initial drop. Whether that is what makes for the best overall product, I don't know. Like, I agree with you that there are two distinct halves to this album, but I also think that there's enough of Destina mixed in the first half and also bits of Antonov mixed in the second half that it doesn't feel like they are completely separate products.
Mm. But they could be. With just a couple of changes, you could make two very sonically different albums.
Yeah, I mean, with a few changes as well, you could make for one really tight, really amazing album instead of a 31 song one, which is long and has a couple of songs that I could personally do without.
I'm curious to hear what that really tight, really good album would sound like, Ian, or what you would pull and what you would switch around. But I do want to just say that in terms of releasing it as two albums, I think that the reason she didn't do that is because Evermore didn't do well. When she released Folklore and then released Evermore a couple months later, it just didn't do as well. People didn't know it existed unless you like follow her, and it wasn't as huge a drop as Folklore. And so I think that that was part of it. because if she'd waited to drop this album, then when, like, one, when would she have time to drop it? Her tour starts again on tomorrow or Friday. Her European leg of her tour is coming up really soon. Like this week in Paris, or this weekend in Paris. And so she doesn't have the time to drop the second half of this album. And I think that that's part of the reason she dropped it as one 31 song thing, is because she wants to move on from this. Like, she's moved on from everything she's singing about and writing about in this album. And she's probably making different music now. Like, I would assume that she's now writing about that she's in love or something along those lines. And that this was very much a product of the time that she was going through when she started writing it, which we know was 2 years ago. There's other things thrown in here from before that that I think she's still harboring resentment towards, or at least still has enough in her to write about it, write amazing songs about it. And now she was very, very clear when she released the album that now that it's out, it's done. She's put this album out and everything that she wrote about in this album is done. It's the door is closed. Like, she was very clear about that when she, in her statement about releasing the album the day that it was released, and that the feelings and emotions that she felt while writing this album, she's over it and she's giving these songs to the people. And I think that that's one of the reasons why it's so big, because she didn't want to hold on to the second half of this album and have to do it again.
I think there's validity in that, and I can understand all that. I think there's going to be people that are missing out in the second half. I think there will be people that, like, I'd be curious to see how the second half of this album compares to Evermore in terms of listeners. You know, do people just listen to the first half of this album and be like, okay, that's enough, I can't do all of it? Yeah, I don't know. I get it. I totally get it. And I respect her, and, you know, who am I to say that she's made a misstep, really? But I don't know. It feels to me like, yeah. I don't know. There's part of me as well that, like, as a creator, I like the idea of her just creating as much stuff as she wants to, putting it out into the world and moving on to the next thing. That's really cool. That's really liberating, and not being beholden to, or not having to hold on to it because of some whatever reason. I think that's really cool. And people can listen to and appreciate or not whatever of that output that they want to. And that's really cool. And, I guess just for me personally, it just felt like the impact of it could have been lessened.
Holy shit. I just looked up how many times I've listened to this album.
You'll have to tell us in a sec.
Sorry, Matt.
That's all right. I think just personally for me, it feels like I could have given more time to each of these albums if they'd been split apart. Whereas now it feels like this whole big thing that it feels quite intimidating still to listen to.
I don't think that's just you. If you look at the Spotify stats, the first 16 songs, every song has more than 50 million listens at the time that we are recording this. The first song has more than 200 million. There's not a single song from 17 down, which has 50 million listens. It sort of drops off as you get further on in the 31 songs. So I think that there is some sort of fatigue that sets in the further you go in the album. But I also think that people listen to things differently than playing the album the entire way through. And who's got 2 hours to... I mean, it sounds like Abby has 2 hours, but other than that, who puts on this album and listens from start to end? Like, you kind of have to consume it in sittings. And I think people, generally speaking, would cherry pick certain songs and skip their way through it that way.
I think one of the reasons that the first chunk of songs is doing better than the second chunk of songs is because the songs in the beginning, specifically from pretty much Fortnite, obviously the first title track, so it can't, or the first single, so it can't really, with a music video and Post Malone, it's not really going to, that's just its own stat, right? But then if you look through like the Tortured Poets department all the way through I Can Fix Him, No Really I Can, without including Fresh Out the Slammer, because, well, I guess we'll talk about songs that didn't resonate as much, but that whole run of songs is very much more trending towards mainstream pop sound, and a lot of the album, especially the Dessner tracks, are not radio hits that are going to resonate with as many people who those songs are going to resonate with. I don't think that it neither group of songs are better than the other. They just have a different listening audience. There is one huge listening audience that is Taylor Swift fans, but in terms of people who prefer to listen to her poppier stuff and people who prefer to listen to Folklore and Evermore, then they are going to like the second half of this album and the Dessner tracks especially more than they like less than they like the original album that came out on far too many vinyl variations. Part of the stats and the like Billboard specifically stats, and the reason that the top 14 tracks that she was in, that she had the whole top 14 tracks, and all of that includes vinyl sales and CD sales, and she did four runs of different variations of the vinyl, including a bonus track. There was it doesn't matter which one was which, but those stats include not the Spotify stats specifically, but like specifically the Billboard stats include all of those pre-sale vinyls. And that doesn't include the anthology part of the album. None of that is available on vinyl, which I think that's my only problem with this double album. My big problem is that I want the second half on vinyl and it's not available. And I don't understand why, because for a girl who is like churning out merch, like it is nobody's business, and good God, woman, you have enough money. This is getting insane. She doesn't have the anthology on vinyl, which is like mind boggling. But I really do think that one of the large reasons why she didn't put this out in two parts is because we will find out very shortly, but because it's being added to the Eras Tour playlist, track list, there's going to be a whole set that is Tortured Poets Department. And the second half of, I think the second half of this album, in her mind, when making the whole thing, they were all fused together. I don't think that she sees this as two albums. Like, and that's just that. And honestly, like as a fan, granted, not one of the crazy ones, one of the just slightly more than normal fans, I did look at this album when she dropped the second, like the 2 a.m. or whatever, 31. I was just like, dear God, how am I going to? I had fatigue. I was looking at it like, there's no way. But then I heard it, and now I have listened to, only in the month of April, and it's May 8th now, so it doesn't include the last 8 days. I've listened to this album 24 times for 2,411 minutes, only in April. So a couple songs got skipped there because the math isn't mathing, but I can tell you exactly which ones I skipped. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like I don't really care if people are upset about the length of this album, if people are going to miss out, that's their problem. And the Taylor gave us this absolute gem of a piece of art, and I am like here for every single, well, almost every single second of it. And I don't care that it's 31 songs. I don't care that other people care that it's 31 songs. It's, yeah, that's fine.
To be clear, when I say that there's too much content, I think that that is like a general expression of that. Like if you have a delicious meal that's put down in front of you and it is simply too big, then you're just like, oh, this is not a slight on the quality of the chef. I just do not have a stomach size for this particular schnitzel. We'll say this is a schnitzel.
Who doesn't have the stomach size for that much schnitzel?
But I've spread out the amount of time that I'm spending eating the schnitzel with this particular album, which I was not able
just
to do
what
with all
my
of
daughter
the
does
and stuff.
And pick all the bread off the schnitzel and just eat the bread.
But is it just like a standard crumb? Is it panko? Like there's a lot of variables in this.
Well, I think the answer is it's a delicious golden brown panko crumb. Yeah. And that panko crumb is the second half of this album, and you just pick that off and eat it.
Oh, well, you've laid your cards on the table, Matthew.
If you were going to make one perfect album out of this album, what would it be?
Yeah, I mean, that's really hard.
You said it, and so now I'm going to ask. Now
because
you
it's,
said it. You hinted at it.
It's still going to be too long an album, but what I would do is I would get rid of Down Bad, which I think is one that you'd like, Abby. Abby is speechless. She's left the room.
Walked out of the room. This is it's a milestone moment for the album files. Mid-recording quit.
The dumbest take I've ever heard.
I would get rid of Fresh Out of the Slammer. That can fuck right off. I think that's the worst song of the 31. Abby hasn't walked away for this take, so I think I'm choosing to believe she agrees. I would probably see, here's the thing with the second half, some of it gets a bit samey, but it is basically just like most of these songs could slot in on Folklore or Evermore.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Folklore and Evermore, so can I complain about too much content when the content is something that I'm perfectly happy to listen to? Like, there's not too much on the second half that I'm disappointed with or want to get rid of. I think there's stuff that doesn't fit in as well as other parts. Like, So High School, I really like as a song, but I don't think it vibes as well with the rest of the second half of the album. And also sounds so much like Kiss Me by Sixpence None the Richer. And if you...
It's a great song.
If you're not sure on that, just listen to that. And I also find the lyrics give me a bit of ick. Almost in the same way that Lizzie McAlpin spilling mac and cheese on her pants. We've got Touch Me While Your Bros Play Grand Theft Auto. And talk of watching American Pie and that kind of stuff.
Like, why does that give you the ick? Is it because it's too specific?
Touch Me While Your Bros Play Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, okay, sorry. I thought it was the Grand Theft Auto, but I missed the first part of what you said.
Touching Me While Your Bros Play It. Like, it's just like everyone's in the room and...
Gotcha.
Someone's getting felt up under a blanket. Like, it's so...
But that's different to the mac and cheese on your shirt thing.
I know, but they're also different reason. Giving me a little bit of... Ugh.
I agree with you, Ian. I agree with you.
Like, it's a strange line. It's also strange to have a reference to American Pie in this, the year of our Lord 2024, in a Taylor Swift album.
Well, but that's the point. That was
it is so high school. No, I do understand. I understand the concept, but it's just not a film that I've thought about since a teenager.
Since high school?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's you hit the nail on the head.
She's a master.
Anyway, you'd get rid of So High School.
No, I'd probably keep. Well, I don't know.
See, this is the thing, though. Like, you mentioned sameness, and I feel like a lot of the criticism that I saw from publications online was that her time with Antonov has run out. She's done too much with Jack and they've hit their creative cap and that she needs to find another producer. But I feel like the Dessner stuff sounds way more samey than any of the Jack stuff. Like,
but
the
it's just
Jack
better.
Stuff stands out to me a lot more. I heard this on the Rolling Stone episode review of this album. They did a two-parter. It's very good. I highly recommend it. I was really worried about listening to it because I didn't want to hear, oh, we're so tired of Taylor Swift, like on my favorite podcast, Pop Culture Happy Hour. They pissed me off. But when I came to this album, they said, Jack Antonoff is an incredible producer who works with a ton of artists and makes a lot of different sounds. If he's making sounds that are similar to other sounds that he's made with Taylor, it's not because he's hit his cap as a producer. It's because Taylor likes that sound, which pulls back to a quote from Lorde, where there was a lot of backlash to Lorde's last album that she did with Jack, where people really hated the album. And there was a whole like, fuck you, Jack Antonoff, went viral on Twitter or whatever the kids say. And Lorde said in an interview, no, Jack doesn't have any say in how the songs sound. I'm the one making them. He does something, I like it, and we make it into a song. It's not him. And I think it's the same in this situation where Jack Antonoff and Taylor, they're in a vibe together, and it's not like Jack can't make different sounding songs. Just what they're making together right now and on Midnights is this. And the Dessner stuff to me is stunning. I have no problem with it at all. But I do feel that it's a little bit hypocritical, that take.
And I fully own up to the fact that it is hypocritical. I just think that if you like one of those sounds and don't like the other quite as much, then the sameness of one will stand out, you know. So for me, the Antonoff stuff and his production and the synths and the kind of subterranean kick drums and the kind of, you know, yeah, synth painting in the background, it's fine, it's good, it's not even just fine, it's good. But I think it's not as exciting to me, and it is samey to me in a way that's not exciting. Whereas the Dessner stuff, I feel like I just, if he's playing piano and she's singing, I'm just happy with that. Like, yeah, it's samey, but it just resonates with me on a different level. And yeah, I know that's hypocritical, but I can understand why people would feel like it is repetitive and it is samey, because it is. But to me, it's also just
better.
But
I think it depends on your preferences.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's also that there's been like 5-6 albums of Antonoff and Taylor Swift where they're working closely together. So there is more volume in that sense. Mm. So the evolution doesn't feel as as pronounced. Whereas with Dessner, there is Folklore and there is Evermore, and there's a couple of bonus tracks here and there, but it is a newer phenomenon. So it probably doesn't feel that it's had as long to get stale.
Listeners won't be able to see Abby looking at her shirt, which has a collection of Taylor Swift's albums, and she's trying to count how many albums Antonoff has collaborated on to fact check Ian's claim of 5 or 6 albums. Is that fair?
Is that right?
I couldn't remember the order. Unfortunately, this shirt now is useless.
Yeah, it's out of date. Another,
maybe I can just, I need just a fabric pen.
It'll need to be twice as big as any other book on the bookshelf on your shirt.
I do feel like a lot of the, like Ian said, the reviews of this kind of bummed me out because I, like especially the Pitchfork review, because I just love Pitchfork and their review was quite bad. And like, how could you possibly listen to this album enough to review it the next day or the day it comes out? I just don't, there's not enough time in the day to do that because it's just such a, you just really like, I feel like I said this in the last episode, but like in this world of TikTok, you need a longer attention span to really be able to soak in this album and understand it. And I do feel like a lot of the reviews like of people on the internet are like just people, like people just really want to see her fail so badly that like people didn't even listen to this album and are pulling lines and just taking things out of context to just say like, look, this is why she's horrible. Like the line in I Hate It Here. And she says, we'd pick a decade we'd rather live in, and she'd pick the 1830s, but without all the racists and getting married off for the highest bid. And people are pulling that line out of context and saying like that she's racist for wanting to live in the 1830s, which is a reference to, I'm pretty sure, Emily Dickinson, and is, well, they completely mix the context, which like one line later, she says, nostalgia is a mind trip. If I would been there, I'd hate it.
Yeah. Like, but why do we care about those people?
And like, I guess we don't care, but it's just like, it is something that has come along with Taylor in general, but like with this album, that people just will go out of their way to like try to prove that she sucks. And I've never in my life, like, I don't watch cricket. I don't go online every single day to tweet about how much cricket sucks. I just don't watch cricket. And yeah. Like, who cares? It's just like so stupid. I saw like one critique of it was like that she's promoting hustle culture, because in I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, she says that she cries a lot, but she's so productive, which to me is the most relatable lyric that she's actually ever written in her entire life. And like does not promote hustle culture at all. Like, what a fucking stupid take.
I get it. I think for me personally, if I start to worry about what other people think, particularly people spouting off on Twitter, I just get into a rabbit hole that's not good for me. So I respect what you guys say about this album.
This is why I can't look up what the references are on Twitter. Sorry, Matt, I keep cutting you off.
No, I was going to say, I respect what you guys have to say about this album, and what you guys say will affect how I feel about it. But, yeah, and I respect what, you know, good journalists say about it, or other people that I respect, but I don't know. I'm not putting any stock in any just random person on the internet spouting off about it, particularly if they don't know what they're talking about.
I think in terms of the Jack stuff versus the Dessner stuff, one thing I did notice is that the Dessner stuff is the deepest cuts. Like, two of the most just gut-wrenching songs, well, I guess three of the most gut-wrenching songs on both halves. So Long London, that's a Dessner track. Love of My Life, or LOML. Does it mean Love of My Life or Loss of My
Life?
We'll never know. That's a Dessner track. And then obviously, How Did It End is a Dessner track, which if you're counting, that is the track 5 of the second half.
You're also forgetting The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, which is...
Yes, which is an absolute banger.
Is that sad or just like, Jesus?
Next level.
One of the most barbed songs that she's ever written.
One of the best moments on this album, there are a couple moments that I wrote down that are like just notable moments of the album, and there's just so many, but I wrote down the ones that I could remember off the top of my head. But one of them is in The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, when the whole vibe takes like an abrupt shift and she goes from like being sad to being just like pissed off, and the whole thing just like completely changes when she sings Were You Sent by Someone Who Wanted Me Dead, and it's like so dark. And yeah, it's so good. And Matt's mentioned before, like how when she's singing, you can hear her breaths. Like you can hear when she's taking breaths. And this album or that song, the sighs, like it opens with a sigh, but there's a sigh also. There's a couple sighs like throughout the song that just sounds so just like, you can just like feel it in your chest.
Yeah. Also when she starts that bridge, her voice gets distorted a little bit there because she's belting it so loud. But I think one of the reasons that I really liked Reputation when it came out, and why I still really like it, is it is such a different sound for her. And I think that moment on Smallest Man Who Ever Lived is one of the best moments on the album, because it is so different. It's so heavy. It hits so hard. It is such an abrupt change. And I just want more of that from her. You know, I think if one of the bigger criticisms of this is that a lot of it does sound kind of the same. And I think that moment I'd love more of that. I'd love more of her pushing herself and channeling more of that anger in a visceral way, because it's so effective when she does.
I think you get that with the Black Dog, first song on this second half as well. There's like a louder, rocky moment and in the chorus. And that's an Antonoff production, but just written by Taylor Swift. And I think some of that spite is there as well, which I really enjoy. I find quite satisfying when she sings that she hopes that it's shitty at the Black Dog, which is the bar that she's watching probably Maddie Healy go into. I'm not sure.
I had that one as about Joe, but I could be wrong on that. What do you think, Abby?
Yeah, maybe. But she hopes that he has a shitty time there.
I don't know. I know you don't care. I think that one's a Maddie Healy. But I didn't spend much time trying to parse which song was about which person, because I feel like it takes away from the actual music that she's made. It is fun. And I do think there are some that are... It slaps you in the face so hard that you couldn't not think about who it is, like Tortured Poets Department, for example, is clearly a Maddie Healy one, and Smallest Man Who Ever Lived as well. And then, of course, the Kim Kardashian song. She literally spells it out for us, so if you didn't know. And The Manuscript is another one that I think it's just so obvious that you can't not know that it's about Jake Gyllenhaal.
Okay. That was news to me, but cool.
Yeah. It's about from my understanding of listening to it. And also I saw it superimposed over the All Too Well music video. And it's exactly, it lines up perfectly with it. And I think it is a song that she maybe wrote when she was revisiting those hurts and making the real giveaway is like the actors were hitting their marks. And I think that has to do with having to kind of relive that in the making of the All Too Well music video.
On the musical front, you mentioned that there's, I can't remember what you mentioned. You mentioned something, and it made me think of this.
Sorry, I mentioned a lot of things.
But I think that there is a musical sophistication to it, which is quite clever and kind of referential to the lyrics. Like in Guilty as Sin, for instance, talks about the Blue Nile song, The Downtown Lights, and it's like a fairly clever reinterpretation of the vibe of that song in the music, which I think is really cool. There's another example that I don't have notes for, but you hear it when you're listening to it. I'm just coming with none of the facts and all of the feelings here. It's pretty disappointing.
That's what we love about you, Ian. All feeling, no facts.
Oh, I said Sixpence, None the Richer. We've got that.
Yeah.
I think you know how she did Dear John and you just we mentioned, wow, in another lifetime.
Mm. Guitar song. We talked
about Taylor Swift. Yeah, that Dear John, one of the coolest things about that song is that it sounds like it could be a John Mayer song. And there are a couple songs on the album that I think there are hints at music made by exes. There are some moments where I'm like, wait, am I listening to the 1975? And then she starts singing and I'm like, oh, no. And there's another song that sounds just eerily like a Harry Styles song. So I think that she's employed that method of.
The lyrics, I think, are worth talking about. Yeah, lyrically, I think this is some of her strongest work. And I noted a couple of interesting word plays that really caught my ear. In So Long London, there's a really nice lead into one of the choruses where she says, I love this place for, and then So Long London, which is like a nice change on the way that it leads into the previous chorus, but just a clever use of words that I thought was really cool. And then just the, I guess, the juxtaposition in I'm going to get you back between, is she saying I'm going to get you back by, as in get revenge, or is she going to get him back as a partner? I think it's just really cleverly done how she's constructed those songs and the way she plays with words in that way, which, yeah, normally the lyrics take me a little while to get into, but those definitely stood out to me, and I'm sure there's a lot more beyond the obvious kind of, like, you know, how sad and pointed and angry and haunting and all that the lyrics are here.
There's like 5 top lyrics that I wrote down, and it barely even scratches the surface of how good her writing is on this album. I feel like it's just years of since high school, she's been writing her own music, and every single time she writes an album, it gets better and better. And this is a culmination of every single album she's written before, and her experiences and growing as a person, and the literature that she reads and what she consumes in her daily life in terms of music and yeah, books and TV shows and stuff. And what's come out of it is this just like incredible lyrical album that is very much like poetry a lot of the time. But for me, I think some of the top lyrics, I'll save the best for last, but in So Long London, when she says, "And you say I abandoned the ship, but I was going down with it. My white knuckle dying grip, holding tight to your quiet resentment. You swore that you loved me, but where were the clues? I died on the altar waiting for the proof. You sacrificed us to the gods of your bluest days," which is like,
yeah, it's pretty good.
All my hair just stood up. Then she, the one of like the most, I guess, viral lines of the whole thing, "You wouldn't last an hour in the asylum where they raised me," from Who's Afraid of Little Old Me. But really that whole song is just like, it's so good.
Yeah, it's another Reputation track.
I think there are songs on this album that you hear, and it's clear that her and Jack have been working on Rep Taylor's version, because they have been recreating that and it has inspired something else. And I think that there are also times when you can hear that she's been working on Debut, because she's got that Southern twang in her lyrics and or in her voice when she's singing. And that is fully Debut Taylor Swift. So that is kind of cool that you can hear hints of what's to come in the re-records. When she says in Peter, "I won't confess that I waited, but I let the lamp burn as the men masqueraded. I hoped you'd return with your feet on the ground." I just love that song so much. One of the most unhinged lyrics on the whole freaking thing. "I'm having his baby. No, I'm not. Yes. But you should see your faces."
So good.
So good. And then, in my opinion, currently, I'm sure it will change, but the best lyric on this entire album, and it's in all bold in my notes, "Say it once again with feeling how the death rattle breathing silenced as the soul was leaving the deflation of our dreaming, leaving me bereft and reeling, my beloved ghost and me sitting in a tree, DYING, from How Did It End?"
Yeah.
So good. So yeah. Good. Also, I love that she did spelling in there after she was so bullied for the Me music video, that she took the spelling bit out of the song when she released the album Lover. Where she goes, "Spelling is fun."
Ah, yes. Why did she take that out again?
Because it was in the music video, and then people like just dumped on her so hard on the internet that she took it out of the song when she released the actual album a couple months later.
Favorite tracks?
The easier answer is not favorite tracks.
Okay, yeah. So you don't like Down Bad?
I love Down Bad. The only tracks that I think didn't resonate with me as much is Fresh Out the Slammer.
It's a weird song.
It's a very weird song. And I still listen to it. I just don't love it as much. And like with But Daddy, I Love Him, and then Florida, the next song, it's like, it's kind of an annoying, it's keeping me back from listening to Florida right after But Daddy, I Love Him. And I think that's one of the reasons that I have a problem with it.
You can still do that. You just need to skip it.
I can't. This is a no skip This whole thing is no skip. I think the Albatross, I don't get it. Whoa. That's like one of the songs that I don't get it. What does an albatross have to do with anything?
Isn't the albatross like a
mice to rescue people in Australia, in the Australian outback?
Isn't albatross like a bad omen for sailors or something? It's got like a historical significance and poetic significance.
Oh, that's a very good point, Matthew. I don't love Robin, but I want to love Robin because I think it's about Aaron Dessner's kid who's named Robin. So it's very sweet that it exists. But yeah. Oh my gosh, we didn't even talk about I Look in People's Windows, which has another producer on there, Patrick Berger, who did, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but who also worked on Slut off the 1989 bonus tracks and did Gold Rush off of Evermore. So he's back for a third song. He does a lot of work with Jack and with the Bleachers. So cool to have him back in there. And I love that song.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the weaker ones on the second half, is what I would say.
Did you guys have favorite songs?
Yes. Yes, I did. I think on the first part, LOML is great. Smallest Man Who Ever Lived is great. Almost the entirety of the second half is great. How Did It End in particular? Cassandra, I really like. Manuscript, I really like. I think I would be happy. Again, I'd love this as two albums, and I think that would give me more appreciation for the first half. But I would be even happier if, for the second album, put So Long London, LOML, and Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, the three Dessner tracks from the first album onto the second half, and can get rid of A Look in People's Windows. Maybe Thank You, Amy, and Maybe I'm Going to Get You Back. And I think that's pretty perfect. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of very, very good stuff on the back half. And that's where I had the most joy out of this whole thing.
That's a good alternative track list.
What's that?
I like that.
I think that my favorite songs, this is so hard to pick, but Down Bad, But Daddy, I Love Him, Florida, Who's Afraid of Little Old Me, LOML, although that song breaks my heart every time I hear it, How Did It End, and Peter are my favorite songs. But I just pretty much love most of them anyway, except for Fresh Out the Slammer.
I like that. It starts with that really discordant guitar riff, which is quite cool. I like that she tried something different there.
I think the only thing that I like about Fresh Out the Slammer and the reason that I don't skip it is because she's singing so low. And whenever she does that low octave, it's just stunning.
Yeah, it is.
Every
cool.
single time she sings like that. And I feel like maybe the first time that we started to really hear it regularly from her was Folklore and Evermore, which is one of the reasons those albums are like so transformative. And as for her as an artist, and so every time she does that on this album, I can't skip it. So I might not like Fresh Out of the Slammer in terms of lyrically, but just her voice, how could you ever say that this woman can't sing?
Who's saying that?
The internet.
You pay too much attention to people on the internet, mate.
Probably true. Imagine if I spent all that time sleeping instead. I'd probably not be sick anymore.
I like the opening trio. I like So Long London, Guilty as Sin, LOML, I Can Do It with a Broken Heart, Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, Clara Bow, Black Dog, I think that I like more individual songs on the first half, but I like the entirety of the second half more.
Mm.
If that makes sense. Like the first half has the better singles, quote unquote. But the second half is something that I'm more likely to want to just listen to if I'm putting on something pleasant.
I forgot to mention Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus. I had that as a favorite as well. That's so good.
Which one?
That's a great song.
All of them together.
All four?
All four together, yeah.
I like Marcus and Sam, but not so sold on Sophia.
Yeah, well, you are a raging sexist. We've established that.
Yeah, seriously. Way to just back up your claim.
No, Sam is a name that can be both genders.
Yeah, except we know what you're like, so...
The intro of that song, like, really reminds me of Champagne Problems.
Yeah, there are a few callbacks and a few motifs that she reuses and a few vocal runs she reuses and a few vocal phrasings she reuses quite a bit. But I think that's going to happen when you're pumping out as much stuff as she is in such a short amount of time. And thankfully, mm-hmm. It's good. She's good at what she does.
According to my Apple replay, Down Bad is the song that I've listened to, well, two more times than the rest of the album on its own. So there you go, Ian.
What did you guys think of Post Malone's feature?
I really loved it. I feel like it's overplayed a bit for me now because it's just everywhere.
Yeah, I had to laugh at that because you were saying last time that there weren't going to be any... Maybe it was in your newsletter you were saying there weren't going to be any radio singles from this album because it's all radio unfriendly. And all I'm hearing when I go out is Fortnite everywhere.
Yeah. I think it's one. I mean, there's a reason that it's the single, right? The first single. Because it is more radio friendly than the rest. And I just watched the music video too many times, but I definitely, the last couple listens through, I've just started at Torture Poets Department to start it off.
I really like that song.
Not because I don't like it. I love it. And I think, actually, you know what's cool about that song is it's the first time that she's ever let someone else sing the bridge.
Yeah, and the bridge is great. It's very posty. It's very, speaking of reused vocal phrasings, it's very much a phrasing and structure he's used before, but... Sounds great. And listening to it really made me want to go back to listen to Austin again, which I did. Album's still great. So that made me happy.
Ian, what were you going to say before I so rudely cut you off?
I was really happy with the opening of that album because it has these vintage synth vibes that I really enjoy. And that song is also a dead ringer for, I don't know if you've seen the movie Drive with Ryan Gosling. But there's a song off
great,
that.
It's a great movie.
Good movie, yeah. There's a song off that by Kavinsky called Night Call. And the sort of sounds so similar. And I love that song. Love that song. So I really had a great time with the opening of the album. And I think that Post Malone kind of blends a little bit into the background. Like, is not super distinctive there. Not to the point of Lana Del Rey on Midnights, but he's a little bit more anonymous, maybe. But even so, like, great song, great opener.
And I think in terms of collabs, her collaboration with Florence and the Machine might be one of my favorite collaborations she's ever done.
I think it's a okay song. It's... Sorry, Matt, we're both talking at once.
Please go for it.
Matthew?
Ian, speak.
Oh, me.
Yeah.
I don't love Florence and the Machine as an artist. Likewise. I know. Shocking.
Are you going to walk out again?
I didn't want to do an episode with you guys.
I just find her music a little bit bombastic, but I enjoyed this one. I think it's good. It's a good song, and it's catchy for three-year-olds. Like, this is the one that Mia was singing along with in the car. Doesn't know what Florida is, and she's just like, floor it off. And I'm like, cool, sing along.
I mean, I enjoy it. I think it's arguably better than the Lana Del Rey collab.
I would agree.
Nothing really comes close to the Phoebe Bridgers collab, to be fair, but do you guys want to rate it?
Yep.
And then we can wrap this up and let you guys go to bed. I think you already know my rating if you read the newsletter. I give it a 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10, flawless. Zero.
But you've talked about how there are flaws.
And how you skip Fresh Out of the Slammer.
No, because even at, like I just said, even though it's not my favorite song, her vocals on that song are so good.
All right.
This is pushing my favorite Taylor Swift album of all time.
Wow.
I think if the second half had been released as a standalone album, it would be giving Folklore a real run for its money for me as well. So I gave this two ratings. The second half is a 9 out of 10. The first half is a 7 out of 10. So I probably land at an 8. But I think that is going to go up over time. I think I will appreciate the first half more. And I think I'll also appreciate the second half more as I go.
8.5 from me. I think it's better than Midnight's. It's, yeah, I think as... I enjoyed as much as anything she's done since Folklore.
So, Abby, how did that go? You're worried? We've given you an 8 out of 10, I mean, an 8.5 out of 10.
It was way better than I expected.
Okay, yeah. That's good.
It went way better than I expected. I do apologize for monopolizing the conversation because I was just so excited. And my husband is so sick of hearing me talk about this album and listen to this album. So I was just really excited to talk to people who were new.
You're welcome.
Because I think one of the things that he was most happy about getting on a plane to leave us behind and go to team camp in Sierra Nevada was that he would no longer have to listen to the Tortured Poets Department. Although imagine him and Teo just jamming out in their room, listening to this album. It's a great mental image.
Would we say that that is happening? Likelihood from 1 to 10.
-2. No, I really, really appreciate you guys. Letting me change the order of albums and listen and talk about this one because it's just been like really, really taking up a lot of space in my brain. And I really appreciate you guys letting me talk so much because I was just really excited to talk about this album. So I'm really grateful for you two. Thank you.
And pleasure. Us you.
It's been fun.
Really? You still want to make this podcast with me after this?
I thought we would go for a full cool. 2 hours and 2 minutes.
So yeah, I had that thought.
To be honest,
well.
I think we've got away lightly.
I was looking at the clock, like it's what 10:15, 10:16 for you guys now.
Yeah,
it's too late.
And the longer we go, the more you have to edit as well, Abby. So
that means I get to relive the whole conversation.
Hooray!
I'm going to make myself a sandwich and have the time of my life. All right. Well, we'll be back at an undisclosed time to discuss my pick of The Prelude to Ecstasy by The Last Dinner Party. But thanks, everyone, for listening. And we hope that you enjoyed this unhinged episode about Taylor Swift's Tortured Poets Department.